Recording?
Yeah, recording. I think I stepped on Alex's line there, sorry. this is what happens when we switch it up for April Fool's Day.
Yeah.
I don't know when I'm supposed to come in.
Well, we could just do one of those things where, you know, stop, reset, do it again.
Nah, we could just pretend we did that. That's some ultimate way. Recording?
I think it's on.
Oh, Rudy, you dropped the fucking ball.
Yeah, recording.
This is Mom's Basement Podcast. We really don't give a shit edition. Episode 34.
Yep. <You
know, laughs> what I realized is, at least not since the earliest days of the podcast have we actually introduced ourselves at the beginning of the cast. Maybe we should do that.
Sure. All right, well, this voice is Alex.
This voice is William, sometimes Hank, whatever, don't give a shit.
This is Rudy.
Rudy. See, now they're going to be... They're just going to be sitting there like, why hasn't that really deep guy gotten to say anything?
All right, so, yeah. This week we playtested In Janeiro.
Yes,
and,
we did.
And to say the least, it was full of epic and awesome win.
Yeah, it was.
It was.
And we're also, just for April Fools, we're going to talk about pranking or trolling other players. But, before we do that, we have at least one, maybe two announcements. I don't know, Rudy, do you want to do a follow-up on your little ongoing soap opera here?
No, I'll just leave Dan alone.
You leave Dan alone?
Yeah.
You're over him now?
Yeah, no, I'm totally.
Rudy gets these crushes, and they're really intense when they happen. But when they're over, they're just, bam, over. And it's who's he? Dan Maruschak? I don't remember him. Maybe his beard is nice, but whatever.
No, I mean, he's a cool guy. I mean, he's a really cool guy, but, you know, I'm just on to other things.
But you still have a place in your heart for him,
though. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
Okay, the second little announcement. Rudy and I have launched a website for our shitty role-playing games. I know that's not how you're supposed to pitch it. It's like, yeah, come look at my games. They're pieces of shit.
Dog shit.
We're not going to talk about that too much on this podcast, but I just wanted to get the website out there. MiseryTourism.com. No dash. Just MiseryTourism, all one word, .com. Take a look at it. Look at our games. See what you think. If you hate us afterwards, comment on it. Drop a comment. If you like the games for some reason, comment on it. I don't know. Rudy, did you have anything to say about that?
Not really.
No.
I mean, yeah, just basically any belligerent bullshit you want to post, just post it.
Or supportive bullshit.
Or that, yeah. But if you want to be belligerent, then go ahead.
Yeah, sure. But take a look at the games. Read them. We have three games up there right now.
Yep.
Once again, I'm not really going to go into the pitch of the site, although you might be able to guess some things by the address. Just go to MiseryTourism.com, see what you think. We'll talk about it more next week. Okay, In Janeiro.
In Janeiro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, okay, let's actually talk about, like what it is.
Right.
Like, this is pretty much, like, In Janeiro Part 2, since, like, few months ago, well, actually more than a few months ago, considering, like, the spread of the time we did recordings. Well, you guys did recordings. In Janeiro was done before, and this is now a revised edition with, you know, extra stuff and all that jazz. So, well, let's first start out by, like, you know, like, Will and Rudy, since you guys played this before me, like, did you notice any differences right away from reading them?
Well, the first thing I noticed was that the manual looks a lot better. The first file we were sent when we playtested it about a year ago was basically, it looked almost like a text file that had been hastily converted. and it wasn't particularly well organized. There were a lot of typos and shit. It turned out to be a really awesome game, but from presentation alone, I was a little worried about it. So the presentation of this game has gone up, like, hugely.
Yeah, I noticed that the manual was basically pretty well done. It's definitely improved since we got it the first time. And that was the immediate thing. Nothing else really comes to mind immediately, because we didn't get to test out all the rules. We just did a short single session game of it. And this is a game that's kind of meant to be played more, like, campaign-wise.
But, and we also really didn't get into combat and confrontation stuff because of the type of game we decided to play.
Right.
So a lot of the cross plays and combat, well, not really combat maneuvers, but the different types of plays, the counter plays and the cross plays and the resists really didn't get used.
Yeah.
In fact, we should have used the resists in a couple of instances, but didn't.
Right, yeah. Yeah, one thing about that, the setup in the manual for resists and crossplays and all that kind of stuff definitely improved from the first time I saw it. There's a flowchart now, and it shows, along with an example, it shows basically how everything works with that. Because I know the first time we played it, we were a little confused.
That was my biggest problem with the game the first time we played it, actually, if I remember correctly, is that I found the different types of plays and when you would use them confusing.
Yeah.
And he's done a lot to improve that in the way that... Mostly it seems like he's just clarified it in the writing, in the text itself. You know, when you use a crossplay, when you use a counterplay, when you use a resist. I know initially I thought resist was... I think I thought you could only, if you resisted, that was the only thing you could do in the turn, but all of that has been nicely cleared up. This manual's a lot easier to read.
Right.
But Alex, since this is your first time playing it, why don't you give us some of your, like, general impressions on the game?
Well, I really did like the openness of the, character design, where pretty much, like, this is not really... To me, like, this is not really, like, a game in the sense of, like, there's a background setting, like, you know, there's not that much of a focus. It's you create the focus, and then because you're invested in the focus already, it makes it that much easier to want to make the a character that's related to the subject that you kind of do.
Right.
And what I'm trying to say is it kind of reminds me, like, I think you guys said before, where it's kind of like GURPS. Where it's not really, it's not like Dungeons and Dragons, where it's easy high fantasy, like you know exactly what the scenario is. Mm-hmm. It's more like a generalized rule system that is applicable to anything that you want.
Right. Yeah, it's so a generic system, is what it is.
Right.
And it's a generic system, whereas GURPS specializes in being a very crunchy, mechanical system with lots of options and things. This really is a generic system designed to generate exciting drama.
Yeah.
And I think
go ahead.
And I think it really succeeds at that, personally. And I thought it really succeeded at that the first time we played it, and I felt it worked this time, too.
Mm-hmm.
What I really liked about the system is, like, because since my only relation, really, to, like, generic systems like this is GURPS, I really like that there really isn't a penalty to doing what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because, like, in GURPS, if you screw up, like, if you want to do, like, a superheroes edition of it, you can screw up in how you make your character, because there'll be other players who are decked out in their superheroes, because they mid-maxed everything to be, like, you know, I get, like, 20 HP per round, you know, crap like that.
Right.
And then that escalates the conflict to the point where the guy who didn't do it correctly, to make himself super strong... is going to be, like, left out in the dust for the game itself. This, there's not much penalty to doing whatever you want.
No, there really isn't.
Yeah.
I mean, the worst thing that can happen is that you don't succeed and you have to try it a different way. or you don't succeed, and that leads to more interesting plot complications.
Right.
And
yeah.
That's one thing I really like about this. Steve Mathers does an excellent job of taking good play advice and really integrating it into the way the system itself is built. You know, as opposed, because there's a lot of games, you know, that will have, here are the mechanics, and here's some advice for how to play the game. And sometimes, and, you know, this is particularly true, I think, in Dungeons & Dragons, but it's true in some indie games, too. Those two things butt heads, you know? You'll have a really clunky system, and then you'll have play advice saying, well, you know, weave in a lot of story, keep things exciting, keep it dramatic, keep it moving, and then the system grinds to a halt whenever there's any conflict.
Right.
And that's something that doesn't happen here in Ingeniero. In Ingeniero, the type of game that the play advice suggests should be happening and the type of game created by the mechanics are the same game.
Yeah.
And that's a nice thing.
Yeah, no, it's really good at presenting itself as far as what it does and what it does well. And I'm not a real fan of generic games in general, but this one, I think I really got kind of caught on to. Because I don't know exactly what it is, but I think it's because the manual is short and it's pretty concise. You don't have to go looking through the manual for character creation and a bunch of other stuff. It's all pretty much boom, boom, boom.
Although, there one point on that. One thing about the layout of the manual, I feel there's an introductory section near the beginning that I feel does more to confuse your ability to understand the game than to really help you understand how games should... instead of going, you know, here's a very short... Here's the, you know, what the game's trying to accomplish, and then walking you through the steps to play the game in chronological order, it feels a little mixed up. There's an introductory section that brings up a lot of ideas that don't get defined until later, and then there's some, there are moments that really, where he starts explaining things when you don't really have all of the knowledge you need to understand what he's trying to explain. And I feel like if he actually just presented the manual in straight chronological order, you know, here's setting creation, here's character creation, okay, here's conflict resolution using the things that you have in character creation, and just walked you through it in the same order you would actually play it,
right.
It would be a lot easier to read the manual.
Yeah, I agree with that one, because when I, since this is my first time reading it, when I got to the first page, I was reading through the first page, and I was like, okay, you're not really telling me anything here. Like, you know, I thought I'm going to get the rules here for a second, then I go to page two, and it's like, you're still not telling me how this game actually works, you're just giving me examples. And then I just keep going down, and it's like, where's the actual rules in this thing? And then finally when I get to page, you know, page 11, he actually starts talking about, like, what the actual game is. So I was like, I'm really confused of, like, what the hell's going on here.
Right.
Meanwhile, like, I really felt like he really, like what you said, he should piecemeal, like, the examples as it goes along, because as of right, like, if I'm not getting, like, a good introduction on page one, and then if I'm not given, like, you know, just start with the rules right now on page two, just go with it.
Right.
I want that, like, when I'm reading the book. I just want introduction of what the hell it is, page one. And then page two forward, start telling me the rules. Tell me story later.
Right.
Make that second half. Because if you start telling me story in the middle of rules, number one, it's going to make it very confusing for table of contents. Mm-hmm. And then, like, you know, it's just going to make it to where, like, I'm going to start linking parts of the story with parts of the actual rules. And that's going to make it even more difficult for me to put my own creative take into it.
Right. And all the information that is in that summary section at the beginning gets repeated again within the text of the game itself, within the explanations. So it's not like taking that out would really compromise the game too much.
Yeah.
You know, I really enjoyed the things I enjoyed the first time around. I think the plays are a really great idea. Plays being, instead of having generic abilities, you have plays you come up with for your character, which are basically specific actions that your character would take and is particularly skilled at, so, and really spelled out in that way. So that gives you a lot of room to really customize what your character does well to match the kind of character you want to create.
I also liked it quite a bit because it kind of like represents like for D&D like with skills, but because there's not like a list of like 7 generic things that you can do with like your character class, if you will, because it's just 1 or 2 things like maybe you put in there, it also helps you focus on like, hey, I should try and lean towards doing something that's related to this,
right?
Because like whenever we did challenges in the playtest, I tried my best to like, okay, I really wanted to do a challenge that actually involves doing this, and like that kind of helped it helped focus what I was trying to do in the story itself.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it a little difficult in the beginning if you're not fully sure like what you really want to do, but like once you have like a good understanding of like, hey, this is what we're doing with the group, it can make it to where like, hey, there's some clarity behind my actions.
Right. And Rudy, do you know if he had the ability to create plays as you go in the earlier version of the manual?
That was in the earlier version, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Because that's something I really like, because it mimics the way that my group, and I know a lot of groups, actually play RPGs.
Yeah.
Where the skills or the little crunchy bits sometimes get left blank on your character sheet and then filled in as you go, as you need them.
Yep.
And it also helps prevent the game from really bogging down too much in character generation, which can be long with this game. This isn't a game where character generation takes 3 minutes. You know, as it's some indie games, character generation is very, very fast.
Right.
This is a longer, more drawn-out process, but I feel like it creates a really interesting character that you can take in a lot of interesting ways.
Yeah, and one thing about character creation... Oh, sorry, Alex.
No, I was going to say, Rudy, how do you think about it? Because I didn't want us to just talk back and forth.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, but one thing about character creation in this game is that you can't really, like, do it wrong.
Mm.
There's no... You know, with D&D... There's a lot of things that can go wrong with, you know, with your character and character creation. Like, you have to calculate your base attack, and you have to, especially if you're starting at, like, say, 6th or 7th level. You know, there's a lot of stuff you have to calculate, and, you know, but this manages to have a fair degree of complexity and depth, but still has a, you know, really simple type of, I guess, entry level or entry point for people.
Hmm. One thing that I wonder about, and I totally agree with you, Rudy, about that, you know, there's no min-maxing here, and there's no worrying about, oh, shit, am I going to start off the game with a gimp character?
Right.
Because the game is designed exactly to prevent there being gimp characters, you know? The game's designed around generating interesting cinematic drama, and it doesn't really matter whether your character is, you know, what exactly, you know, whether you've taken the time to min-max your character.
Right.
As long as you're playing a character that matches the theme that you set, laid down, you know, the setting and the pitch that you lay down when you begin the game, you should be able to use your character and find ways to use your character in play.
Yeah.
One little thing is, and I think I brought this up last time, but I'm still not sure that you need so many motives. Having beliefs and desires and issues and relationships gets a little redundant and adds, at least looking at my character sheet, it looks like a lot of, you know, it's almost regurgitation. It's almost rewording it in a different way, rewording a belief so that it's a desire, so that it's an issue.
Right.
And I wonder if having all of that's necessary, because it does add some time to character generation, and I'm not sure it adds that much when you're actually playing the character.
I think
For me, it kind of helped a bit because we actually spent almost an hour doing character creation there. When even though it's kind of simplistic, the system itself, for making characters, but I think what he was going for there was because we have to define some of the moods for our characters. It really helped. With method acting, where when you put enough of your ideals of how you want the character to be, it makes it that much easier to act it out. Because when you did your character, and you did your listings of the stuff, yeah, they were almost all the same thing in terms of feminism, all that kind of stuff, and respecting the other people's orientations for their own personal bodies there.
Right.
I'm trying to skirt away from this as much as possible. because of that, it really helped let me know how you were going to act with your character, and you also acted with your character spot on 100% of how it's set on the page. So there was a much it synced up story a lot easier because I was used to butting in, and you were used to just ignoring what I had to say.
Yeah.
So a lot of the time, that made it work really well for the actual story part, because this is the perfect way to, if you want to do, your mini theater style of role-playing, where you want to make, a play, a three-act play, or, a movie, this is almost perfect.
It is.
For that style, because as long as you have, one or two people who are actually, trying to go with the story, with the plot, everyone knows what their motivations are, and because of that, even though it takes a little longer to make your characters, it makes it to where it's almost there's no way you're going to not know what each other are doing.
That's a really good point. I mean, it really does help with cooperative play. You really do know. You can look at the other player's character sheet and say, oh, this is how my character would interact with them. In a way that you wouldn't necessarily know, oh, okay, I know by looking at the fact that this guy is a half-orc paladin, to pick on D&D again, I know that my human rogue is going to interact with him this way. No, it doesn't really give you any hints for role-playing. You know, those type of systems don't. But this system, really, you can look at your character, look at your relationships, your beliefs, your motivations, and look at theirs, and their goals and everything else, and think, oh, this is how our characters could come together. Rudy, you were going to say something before I interrupted you.
Well, I was just going to say, as far as the amount of motivations, I think for a longer-term campaign, maybe it might be sort of necessary for, just so people kind of stay on task. Like, I know there are a lot of long-term goals and stuff that didn't really come up in play. Like, even some relatively short-term goals that, our characters had, I want to take this person to the Sadie Hawkins dance or whatever, didn't really come up because we only played one session.
Right.
But I think it's a good way to keep everybody, on the same page as far as what's going on in the campaign. Like, the fact that you have to, you have your motivations, have to relate to your goals and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
I really liked that quite a bit, and that was it was also making it really good because if you had the long term goal, it also kept in perspective what you were trying to do, and even if you didn't get to it that session, if you were willing to take that character or that action, you can maybe work with somebody else to continue the story. If you're using the same system,
right?
And it's just like the way we started it off, and like, yeah, we didn't get much done. Like, I didn't create my robot, you know,
yeah,
to have with this my friend. I didn't get to do that, but I used that, like, that love of robotics and such to, like, I used it as inspiration to help, like, you know, mess with your character's skateboard.
Yeah.
I used that to mess with your skateboard because I was inspired by robotics, and that was going to help me further along into, like, you know, focusing my character in the love of doing that.
Yeah.
And
so it's short. They're long term goals, but it definitely helps with planning out your future sessions.
Yeah, it does. I think.
Yeah, and that's one thing about this game, and I am trying to bring this into a larger point here. When a lot of times I think when you have games that are designed around producing dramatic situations as opposed to being games designed primarily around combat or primarily around, you know, setting indulgence or whatever. But a lot of times with these games that try to produce, that are really storytelling games, that are trying to produce interesting narratives, the mechanics will be more about containing play and constricting play and controlling play than inspiring play.
Right.
And I feel like in Ingeniero, every mechanic is really an inspirational mechanic. It's a mechanic that, and every little thing on your character sheet, the plays, everything about the game is about inspiring creativity as opposed to trying to structure the type of narrative that you as the game designer want to see come out of this game. And that's really refreshing for me to see after some of the games we've played.
Yeah. It definitely doesn't confine you, like, in any way. It doesn't feel confining, even though there's, like, a lot of options. I know in some games where there's options, the options almost feel restrictive.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you have to think of all this stuff before you can play. But in this, we kind of rolled with it, and it seemed like it just went really smoothly as far as creating characters.
In some ways, it went almost too smoothly because we forgot about some elements of the game. It was moving along, so I just realized I never used any of the story scenes.
Oh, yeah.
I
was going to say, it does say in the manual that you don't necessarily need to use them if everything's flowing along smoothly.
Right. And the scenes were just following each other in such a natural way that I didn't even think about it. But those are great to have in there if you ever get writer's block.
They are. Yeah.
Alex, I think you were going to...
Well, what I was going to say is, like, why don't we, like, say something, you know, we got things that we did, like, down a lot. We like this game, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Let's list off some negatives, just so that way, you know, we get a pros and cons of this.
Okay.
Yep.
Rudy, you want to start us off?
Trying to think. It's going to be hard for me to come up with negatives for this game because it was so awesome. But,
Well, while you're thinking, I think I can think of two things right now. Number one, the XP system doesn't really feel rewarding. Since it's basically just used to refresh your body and soul.
Right.
It's basic, and body being your physical almost hit points, and soul being your psychological hit point. Mm. Using it to refresh scores doesn't really feel like, using it to pull things back to the status quo doesn't really feel that rewarding. And also, since there are mechanics there for you to slowly regain these points anyway, it seems like there almost needs to be something else. If you're going to have XP as advancement, or if you're going to have something there that you're calling experience points, it feels like people expect that to be a form of advancement, a form of reward, and just letting you return back to the way things were when you started doesn't seem that exciting. As opposed to the way plays advance, which I think is awesome, where if you risk body and soul, you can advance your plays, and I think that's kind of cool. I like the fact of advancement being contingent upon taking risks.
Yeah, see, I like that.
the XP thing just really didn't seem that, you know, it didn't really seem that, once again, rewarding to me. It didn't seem like something, like you were really getting something for accomplishing your goals.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you on that one, because when I was looking at the XP system, and I was seeing, like, let's see here, like how, like, body and soul are, like, replenished, I think he also put in there, if, like, body can, like, get repaired, like, one per week or something like that. Mm-hmm. And just seeing that kind of thing called with the XP system, it felt a lot like there was a lot of influence of Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where it seemed like the system was there to add crunch to it when it really doesn't need crunch at all.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true, yeah.
Because, like, when you have your motivations, you have, you know, your plays, that felt like that's all the crunch you ever need. Leveling up plays and stuff like that, that should probably be, like, a subjective rule. It doesn't really need to be, like, a literal, this is how you do it, because if the game is really trying to enforce a storytelling ideal in terms of, like, you know, helping people be inspired to do storytelling, there should be a little more focus on trying to add less crunch in the way. And that's also another negative thing I wanted to talk about was, like, the system that he put up for, like, phrases of, like, you know, target, resist, crossover, roadblock, you know, things like that, where a lot of it felt like it was adding more mechanics than was really necessary, because we didn't really do it, like, at all for our play, and, let's see here, a lot of it, like, when I was reading the actual manual itself, like, just seeing, like, the pictures, like, the arrows, I mean, he even says, like, it's really not as confusing as you think it is, but when just reading the examples followed by, like, how it works, I was really confused. And we just didn't even bother, like, talking about what we were really doing. We just made rolls, and it was kind of self-evident what we were doing. Yeah. Like, when you did your resist roll, you basically did a resist roll. Like, when we were doing the whole, because we made a poster, and I wanted to put it up in this area, and Will's character wanted to resist it, but we just didn't call it resist. We just said, I'm going to pose it.
Yeah.
That's true. And the mechanics here, for the most part, are so intuitive and so natural that you don't even think about the words that have been assigned to them. It just feels natural to do that. It's not like, oh, I'm making a resist roll now.
Right.
I'm making a cross play now. And in fact, roadblocks did come up. We just didn't call them roadblocks. We just handled them exactly the way he says to handle a roadblock in the text, you know. Don't prevent someone from doing something, but if they fail, they're going to have to do it a new way. You know, complications come up.
Right.
You know, or they accomplish what they're trying to get, but they don't accomplish it in the way they intended to.
Right.
And, Baruti, what was it, what did you not?
Well, I think, not the plays, but the diagram of the plays, the cross, where it shows cross plays and interference and all that kind of stuff, was a little bit confusing with the examples. I mean, it's a lot better than the first copy of the game we got, but it was just kind of, I don't know if there should be more examples or if the examples should maybe be different, but it seemed kind of a little bit, a lot to take in, basically, for...
And a lot more than the reality of the situation.
Right, it seemed like it was a lot more than something you'd actually see in play.
Right.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about it. There's a lot more positives than negatives, and the only negatives are stuff that we really didn't do it to begin with.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe refinements on how, like, the XP system and the chart works, like those target sayings, like a refinement on those two things, like to make it a little clearer, or to make it to where, like, put it as, like, a side rule, hey, don't even bother saying them if, you know, you don't need to say them.
Right.
Like, those, that's the only real negative besides, you know, the character creation where it could take longer than normal. But that's just personal taste. That's not the fault of the system itself. So those two negatives, the XP and the, you know, and the crosswords and all that kind of stuff, that should need a little more refinement, but everything else, freaking awesome.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my second thing was, because I did say I was going to say two things here, my second thing was that I think Steve should consider, with indie games, you don't necessarily have the money to pay a professional editor. But if he has someone he knows who has some kind of editorial sense, and he wants to slip him $50 or something, you know, I think he should get someone to edit this text for organization, and also there's still some lingering typos and things, just to really clean the text up a little bit, because this is a really fantastic, fantastic game, and I wouldn't want presentation to be something that turns some people away from the game.
Yeah.
Okay. Any final thoughts on Ingeniero, or does that seem like it?
I think the last 2 minutes wraps it up, where it's full of, like I said, epic and awesome win.
Yeah, it is.
And there's just a small few things that are getting in the way of the actual game itself.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree with that. So, moving on to our topic, which is our April Fool's Day topic, trolling other players. I think we need to give Rudy the first word on this. I think we should even need to step aside and let Rudy give a thesis on this, since Rudy is the guy when it comes to trolling other players.
well, you kind of put me on the spot, because it's kind of difficult to recount the entire history of every, you know,
every
thing I've done.
You've ever played.
Yeah. But, first of all, I guess you gotta define what trolling means. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to play D&D and any game. You know, so there's always gonna be someone who thinks, well, either you're playing it wrong, or you're doing this the wrong way, or you're going about this, like, you're not supposed to attack your party members and that kind of thing.
No PvP.
No PvP, yeah. But, so, I mean, I guess I would define it as basically doing something on purpose to get under another player's skin, maybe?
Yeah, trying to get a rise out of another player.
Right, yeah, trying to get a rise out of them. And that's something that I basically made myself very skilled at doing during our games, and I guess it's a little difficult to talk about it without, you know, I really wish we had Brandon here, because he could talk about it. We could have some conversation back and forth with that, but
Brandon being our former player.
Yeah, he actually appears on one of the podcasts, actually.
Although
it's from the other,
anymore,
yeah, from the other season.
Episode.
Yep.
I guess the question is, I mean, there's so many questions we could ask about trolling, right?
Yeah.
We could first of all ask about, like, the morality of it. Is that a good play practice to troll the other players, trying to get under the other player's skin? Another thing we could ask is, you know, and Alex brought this up before we started casting, how much is too much.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing we could talk about is techniques. Like, what are some techniques to really... And I think Rudy could give us some of those. But, no. Well, let's start with the big question, though. Is this something that's okay to do?
I totally think it's fine.
Yeah.
I think it's A-okay with me. It's just, like, for me, it's all about, like, what I was talking about before we started here. Was like is going too far. Like, at what point are you just being malicious, and at what point are you just like joking around, like, you know, playing with the ego of the character to like to inspire more role playing.
Right.
But playing with the ego of the other player.
Right.
Exactly.
Which becomes a big thing, I think, because I think that trolling is fine as long as you are using it to deflate someone's excessive confidence. If you have, like, a min-maxer at the table who is so, like, so hyped about how they perfected, you know, their character, and they can tell you all about their skill ranks or their abilities or their, you know, and they're just really, they're so sure they have the biggest dick at the table, basically.
Yeah.
When you have someone like that, or someone who is, like, a Shakespearean actor, you know, who really, like, you know, real ham, and who isn't doing it, you know, for fun or in a self-conscious way, but it's just a really, you know, a huge ham, or, you know, whatever, or someone who's, like, just in love with the setting they've created, or someone, their presence in the game is this kind of monolithic, you know, it's this kind of dominating thing. And when their expectations for the game are very high, and when they expect to be treated with, like, a certain ridiculous level of respect, I think that's when trolling isn't just allowable, it's necessary. I think it's almost a social tactic to turn an environment that is passively hostile into an environment that is actively hostile. So you can get an environment that isn't hostile at all as an end result, if you're lucky.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a good way to deflate people's egos and kind of maybe show off, you know, how other people's role-playing styles clash with your own, I guess. And I think that's really necessary in games, because, like, those things normally would be difficult to talk about, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's books written about how to talk about play styles with your players and stuff like that. There's essays written on it. There's all kinds of stuff, because it's so difficult.
Yeah.
And I think a really active way to show the different, you know, different play styles and different techniques, I guess, is really to have them clash.
And to have someone actively working to create that clash.
Right.
What do you think, Alex?
Well, it's definitely a sensitive technique that you can try to pull on somebody, because it really depends on, like, you have to really gauge the person you're trying to say, hey, calm the F down with whatever you're trying to do here. Or, you know, hey, kind of, you know, focus up here. You're doing something I don't like, but I'm not just going to, like, you know, bash you openly on the, you know, around the table. Let me try and do, like, a little joke here, and, like, you know, hopefully this joke will not be something that will make you, like, vomit and, you know, obscenities at me.
Right.
So it's something that it should be considered more often than just. I would consider trying to use that more often than just trying to do open talk discussion. Just because what I just said there, it doesn't really make sense, because you wouldn't want to do open discussions, right? You know.
Right.
But the reason why is there are so many people who get really defensive about,
yes,
like, what they're saying.
Right.
And so if you're actually up front and you're just, you know, you just say it as it is, it can get to the point where it's a roadblock, you know, playing off the game. It's a roadblock between, like, you know, what your real intent is versus, what you're actually trying to do. Because if you're just, like, if you were being open, it could be, like, oh, this guy's challenging my way of playing a game. What the hell? This is ridiculous. And then it's just going to be, because he's on the defensive, it's just going to be, you know, F you, F you, F you, I'm out of here, see y'all bitches later.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
In some ways, having a frank and open discussion with someone who is already a problem player can be more confrontational than trying to find, okay, maybe passive-aggressive, but passive ways, anyway, to bring it out and play, and to find catharsis in play, and to sort out those problems in play. I mean, isn't that why we're role-playing in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, and to do it within play is basically better, I think, because then it doesn't come off as personal, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't come off as like, well, okay, let me sit you down and tell you something about, you know, how you interact with other people.
Yeah, I mean, who in the Mom's Basement podcast crew could ever have that conversation without being a complete hypocrite?
Yeah, see that. I mean,
it's like, we need to talk to you about your social skills.
Yeah, you know.
All right, so, like, we got a good understanding here. Like, you know, this is why there's some positives to actually doing something that's considered negative around the internet, considering, like, most trolls are people who do the lolzors, you SOB, you know. They use other words, but I don't want to use gay slurs right now.
Right.
Yeah, because most trolling people think of that when really it's just trying, like we said before, just trying to get a rise out of people. So, like, let's get, like, some examples of, like, doing it right and some examples of doing it wrong.
Ooh, Rudy, you gotta give us some examples of doing it right. What's your most satisfying troll experience?
Huh. Well, actually, let me just say something that's not about me first.
Okay.
Oh. I think, there was
I know
a...
this friend who trolls.
Yeah.
Me?
Alright, continue. I got in the way.
But there was a game, that was a Ronnie winner, I think. It was called, what was it, Sunshine something?
Well,
it was Willow Pilichek's game.
It was called The Secret Lives of Serial Killers.
Oh, right,
also
but...
Mr. Sunshine.
Yeah, yep. But, that... Oh, sorry.
Going off that one felt to me, like, when I heard about that one felt like malicious trolling. Where the entire reason is to cause, like, mental harm.
See, that didn't seem that malicious to me, and I don't know if it was the way it was written or maybe just that I'm a degenerate fuck, but it just didn't seem... It was well done, and basically, I think it was pretty evident that it was a joke, you know? At the end of everything, it's evident that it was a joke, and it wasn't like a fuck you or anything like that. Which I think...
Okay, so... Continue.
Oh, which I think some trolling techniques might leave, you know, the impression of that it's basically like, well, fuck this person, you know. But
I mean, no, what were you going to say?
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to weigh in on the secret lies of serial killers, but just for any of our audience or one listener maybe didn't follow the game on the Ronnie Awards, it was a game where you told the where you had three players, right?
Mm.
And two of them are in on the joke. One of them isn't. The one who isn't in on the joke believes they're going to play a romantic comedy game about their relationship with this, like, you know, grumpy and eccentric but ultimately lovable next-door neighbor. And everyone else knows that the eccentric next-door neighbor is actually a serial killer who is going to abduct the player not in the know and kill them at the end of the game in a really brutal way.
Huh.
I thought so much of that game, and you know, Willow flat out said, don't play this game. This game is made to be played. But the first thing I thought is, boy, I'd love to play this game.
Yeah, it's like I know people that I would play that game with.
But you know what I also thought? I said, I'd love to be the victim.
Yeah.
That game played. And I think you have to put yourself in that mindset.
Yeah.
Is this something that would hurt me if it was done to me? Would I enjoy this if it was done to me? And I know everyone's experience is subjective.
Right.
But that didn't seem like a game that would bother me.
Yeah, same.
Because it didn't, as you said, it didn't feel like a personal insult.
Right.
Well, yeah, a lot of it has to do with, like, the intentions behind, like, the two people and the person that they pick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The reason why I said it felt malicious to me was, like, you know, the entire purpose was just to, like, to make them feel bad was the game itself, when I was thinking about it, it felt like the entire purpose was to pick someone who treated, like, their character really seriously or, like, they thought it was, like, very fun and friendly environment
mm-hmm.
with the other two people.
Yeah.
And then when that happens to them, it's like, what the hell are you doing, guys? This is messed up.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's what I felt like when they had, because most of the time when I think of role-playing, I think of fun, friendly environments where we don't really, like, you know, we don't do that kind of stuff to each other in terms of, like, PvP content,
right.
which that kind of, that's kind of what it is.
Yeah.
And so, like, when a person actually does that to your character, it's kind of like what are, you're violating the trust that I had with you. Mm-hmm. So that's what I meant by it. So, like, you are right. Understanding who your audience is before you do something like that is very key to getting away with it. And making it, like, a jovial thing instead of the entire point is to, like, you know, say F you in the middle of the game.
Right.
Yeah, it's like a prank, you know. I mean, it's kind of...
Yeah.
And know who you're about to pull the prank on. I think that's key. If you're just being a bully about this, if you're picking the weakest, most naive member of your role-playing group and doing this to them, that's kind of a dick move. But I think that's the perfect game. The perfect victim for that game is the tyrant GM. The guy who uses the rules of games to abuse his players to really, really have an iron-fisted control over the players, and really, in some ways, to violate them. You know, he's getting almost a sadistic pleasure out of this. Mm. So that's the perfect game, I think, to sit him down and make him sit through. Mm. Because really, you're making him experience what, in a very direct way, what he's been making his players experience in a, maybe a more subtle way before that. But Rudy, you were going to really talk about your... I thought you were going somewhere with that, with your favorite tool.
All right, well, yeah, I'll just talk about one that I had that was pretty satisfying for me and was pretty shit for the rest of the group, I think. Well, there was a campaign that ran where I was playing a goblin or something, a goblin dude, and he had a dog with him. And he beat his dog, and he was a goblin, yeah. I mean, he beat his dog, you know. It was a riding dog. I bought it. It was my, you know, my shit. And the first thing that happened at the beginning of the game was a character was killed by the other players.
they really didn't take kindly to animal abuse.
No, they didn't. And but then the character actually got to come back as a ghost.
Now, but just to clarify this, so they didn't just, like, beat you up and you happened to die.
No.
They, like, burned your car.
Yeah, I was put in a barrel and, like, fried and fricasseed.
Right.
Yeah, no, it was pretty brutal death. I mean, I didn't care, but it's just that, you know, hey, you know, you gotta pay the piper at some point. So anyway, this character comes back as a ghost, and basically I use that ghosthood to basically invoke every, I guess, GM privilege, GM player privilege, and just abuse the hell out of the rest of the group, by doing things like throwing piss at them, pulling their pants down.
I was GM, and the rule I set was, okay, the degree to which you can interact with the other players in the group is limited to what you could if you cast a 0th level cantrip mage hand.
Yeah.
So you have 5 pounds of force there. You can't use any more than 5 pounds of force.
Yeah. But it turns out that can be pretty devastating.
Yeah, especially if you, say, take a branch and set it on fire and then use it to set everyone's tents on fire.
Yeah, see that. And this continued for, I think, probably about how many sessions was new campaign? It was like maybe 8?
So.
Oh, okay, yeah. It continued for 10 sessions. And basically the victims included the entire group, including another character that another player had made that was like his brother or something. Remember that? Wasn't that B-Boy's character?
Yeah.
So, like, his brother was tortured to death by this ghost, and he got to, you know, he got to see it, too. Which I thought was pretty great. Generations of characters tortured by this one dude. But, yeah, I mean, and at one point, it got to the point where, basically, the other players said, you know, we're not going to fucking play this anymore.
Yeah,
I think,
no, we're done.
Yeah, I think B-Boy's words were, that's it, I quit this campaign, or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess, I mean, I'm not really sorry about it, but I guess that...
This is becoming Tools Anonymous.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was fun for me, and I know it was probably shit for everyone else. But, I mean, I don't think it was totally shit. It wasn't... I wasn't being malicious, you know, and, like... I wasn't being out-of-game malicious. The intent wasn't to be out-of-game malicious anyway with other characters, but... I know the ghost did hog a lot of the spotlight time, and it was kind of unfair there. It basically became a campaign about my character.
Yeah, it's
And it was kind
of... That was my bad as a GM, in part, not bringing the hammer down on you harder.
Yeah.
Like, no, this is... The line is here. You don't cross that line. This is what you can pick up. This is how many times you can throw feces on the group in a game.
Yeah.
And on that, they have some adventuring to do.
Yeah.
And I failed to do that.
Yeah.
What was the thing that should matter though, when you're doing the when you're doing your trolling,
right.
Is what was the reasoning behind wanting to do that? Was it like, you know, having your character die and, you know, you weren't really pissed, but it was like, there's nothing else I can do, and since my character was a jerk to begin with, I'm going to be a jerk to these guys since they killed me.
Yeah, that was essentially, like, it was basically, they killed my character, and I thought it was for no reason. I mean, I was just beating my dog, it was my dog to beat, so hey, I mean, PETA can suck a dick, basically, but,
Well,
I mean,
you weren't beating a dog in real life. Awesome.
It was my character's riding dog that I paid 150 gold pieces for. And,
I think, like, the big problem was not on your part, was the other players weren't comfortable with how you wanted to play the game, so, like, their version of they did bad trolling. Where they didn't, like, try to reason with you outside or inside the game. They just killed your character. And then your response, which was the more positive trolling, was to, like, say, hey, this is what you get. This is what you get for just trying to kill my character. You get revenge goblin. instead of just a guy who's peaceful with getting himself slaughtered by your group.
Uh-huh. And as GM, the way you described it, Alex, that's exactly how I saw it.
Mm.
So that's why I let Rudy play it up as much as he did. But in retrospect, I sometimes think that maybe the players were just trying to do a preemptive strike. Since they hadn't played with Rudy before, they were like,
right.
Oh my god, beating the dog is not going to be the end of this.
Yeah, that's just like, step one.
like the other players, though, the other players could have, instead of, like, you know, just doing that, which you should really not do, period, like, with any group, especially since, like, you know, the guy is going to be with you every week.
Right.
You should try and do things that are going around that, like, instead of doing, like, the standard of, okay, I hate him, let's kill him, let's go, like, he loves being this dog so much. Why does he like being this dog so much? I can't find out why he likes being the dog so much, so let's try and take the dog away from him.
See, that's
and,
what I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First
but they... Yeah.
Rescue the dog. You know, if this is bothering you, save the dog. Don't kill me.
Yeah.
All right, so, like, so going from that kind of thing, because that's a positive trolling under the experience of what negative trolling really is mm-hmm. when you're trying to really, is when you do the ultimate thing and just get rid of the person's agency.
Yeah,
that's usually that a lot. That's what negative trolling really is when you try to remove power away from people you're trying to prove a point against. Like their point was animal cruelty is bad. They did a really terrible job by just killing his character.
And
his positive. Go ahead.
Can I just say something because I don't want to seem like the victim here? Because this was
you were also an asshole.
Yeah. Oh no. Okay. Just to get that clear, because this was like 10 sessions of my character basically pissing and shitting on literally on their characters.
Well, it went both ways.
It did go both ways.
Capable of that, though. In all honesty, you were a ghost. You had it was their piss and shit.
That's true.
But I think Alex really hit the nail on the head when he said the word agency.
Yeah.
Because I think that's what really differentiates good trolling from bad trolling.
Mm-hmm.
Good trolling is about using your agency to trouble what's going on in the group.
Right.
To to frustrate the situation or to point out something that's flawed in the situation. Yeah. Bad trolling is taking the agency of other players away, taking their ability to respond, their ability to act, their ability to have any kind of control over their character away.
Right. Yeah, I'd pretty much agree with that.
Let me give you like a good example of like, you know, just full on positive trolling. Mm-hmm. Like where there's no like messing with the characters that badly because of like some because of Rudy's example where he got messed with, so he messed with them back.
Mm-hmm.
This one's just full on positive as much as I can. Like one of my D&D friends. I mean, I'm not going to mention his name because, you know, we don't need to, but he knows exactly because I told him to listen if he could. But what it was is I was doing we were reading a Wheel of Time book because he loves that series so damn much. He loves it a lot. he was showing me like the RPG book and like a picture of like one of their races, like I think it was like the Aes Sedai or something like that.
Yeah.
Or Aiel. So it's something with that because, you know, the names confuse me kind of.
Wouldn't be the first one.
Yeah.
But what it is like it was a group of people who live in the desert. I think those are IE.
Yeah, that's the IE, I think.
Rudy's the Wheel of Time expert.
But when I saw the picture of what they're supposed to look like, I said like, what's a bunch of Asians doing in the desert? Because they look like Asian people. what he said as like a response was like, you know, all because like it's D&D doesn't mean it's medieval fantasy. When, you know, really that's what D&D is. Mm. But going off what he was saying, I was like, you know what? I'm going to get at this character.
No, wow,
and,
nice.
What I did was when we did our D&D, because I was GM for the D&D game, and what I did is I made it where we did, they were mercenaries / archaeologists by accident, where they went around trying to find treasures, like Indiana Jones style. And what ended up happening is they went by boat to this large object way out by the beach there, and it was a flooded office building way off from the get go and from way out there from the beach side. And so they went there, did their investigation, and they found the relic that they were supposed to get, and I said it was the Book of Ten Dragons. And if you know where I'm going with here. The Wheel of Time, originally, there was, only 10 books, and, three books were afterthoughts.
Right.
So, when they found it was just the Wheel of Time books.
Oh, boy.
And then the NPC character says to him, what's this garbage? Blah, blah, blah. It's not that freaking impressive. And then, we had our fight scene afterwards of, him fighting, them fighting crab monsters and all that kind of stuff out there. But the whole point was, the entire fetch quest was making fun of, this epic story of, 10 dragons and, you know, it's not medieval fantasy, blah, blah, blah. And then I pulled exactly, what he wanted. If this is not medieval fantasy, this is, a relic in time of a previous history. And is also making fun of his favorite series just a little bit.
Right. Yeah,
I think that's a good example. That's a good one where nobody gets hurt and no campaigns get destroyed.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's the main point is when you try to pull pranks on people, it doesn't have to destroy them. It doesn't.
Yeah, no.
It could just be a good laugh on what the person really thinks about something. It doesn't have to be a negative experience.
No, absolutely.
And on that note, Dan Maruschak, please get back to Rudy. He's in love with you.
I mean, all that stuff in the beginning, that was hogwash, where, you know, he's not over you, Dan. He's really not over you.
And
we're going to hear about an hour of this after we're done recording. We are.
Yeah, he's going to be crying. You haven't never heard Rudy cry on podcast, Dan, but you don't want to. It's terrible. My heart breaks every time I hear it. He sobs. He just wails. It's like some folkloric banshee, you know? It's either.
Oh, poor Dan.
I don't know. I just wanted to build on her idea of good-natured teasing.
Yeah.
Alright, so yeah, that's all I got to say for today, you know.
Yeah.
It was a great experience with Ingeniero.
Yeah, no, yeah, it was a great
game.
I
really enjoyed it again. Any final thoughts for you, Rudy?
Nope. Not okay. Particularly.
How many minutes have we used?
We're at 104 right now.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's about right.
Yep.
Okay, then. Well, so we'll be back next week with, if you have a game, we don't have a game for next week. If you have a game you want us to play next week, send it to momsbasement@miserytourism.com.
Yep.
All right. Okay, signing off.
Alrighty, I'm gonna stop recording now.
Stop recording?